From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, February 27th, 2018. And on this day, the LePage administration backs off a proposal to overhaul the county jail system less than a month after introducing it. And as state and federal legislatures look at possible gun control measures, we'll go to a gun show in Augusta. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
Less than a month ago, the LePage administration announced a controversial plan to overhaul the county jail system, which the administration said would save the state $10 million. Now the governor's backing away from the proposal. Meanwhile, state funding for county jails runs out at the end of June. And as Mal Leary reports, it's not clear where lawmakers go from here.
Department of Corrections Commissioner Joseph Fitzpatrick was a no-show at a scheduled briefing of the legislature's Criminal Justice and Appropriations Committees Tuesday. The commissioner had agreed to answer questions about the DOC's recently announced plan to close five county jails and restructure the rest. Instead, the governor's chief of staff, Holly Lusk, opened the meeting with some brief remarks.
My understanding is that the governor had been informed that this particular piece of legislation was not received in a particular way that led him to believe that it had much chance of success. And so consequently, he believed that it was not a good use of time for Commissioner Fitzpatrick to attend today.
In other words, the LePage administration is giving up on its proposal to overhaul the county jail system that was only made known to sheriffs through the release of a report earlier this month. So instead of hearing from the DOC, committee members heard from county sheriffs who showed up to attend the briefing.
You know, it's disappointing that we had come up to hear the rationale.
Cumberland County Sheriff Kevin Joyce is president of the Maine Sheriffs Association. Joyce criticized the way the DOC released the jail report as unsettling. He calls for significant changes in the way the jails are funded and managed, including creation of three regional jail authorities. But Joyce and other sheriffs say it contains some fundamental flaws that could wind up costing taxpayers more money and headaches in the long run.
This plan, you know, the headlines are save $10 million. Well, what individual is not going to look at that and say, wow, I'd shut down some jails to save $10 million? But when you peel back the onion and look at it, what it really means, you've got some jails that are potentially being shut down under this proposal. They're going to leave some police departments out there hanging.
For example, Joyce says small police departments with one or two officers on the road at a time may be less inclined to make arrests if they know they have to drive further to transport someone to jail. Joyce says the plan calls for him to take on 160 additional inmates in Cumberland County. And that means he would have to hire more staff, which are already hard to find. And then there are health care costs for those inmates.
Then I would have to increase my medical contract right out of the gate, $317,000 just for my medical costs. Play that out against the other jails behind me.
Behind him was Penobscot County Sheriff Troy Morton, whose jail partners with two of the five jails slated for closure in the report. Washington County and Piscataquis County.
One of the things that the report doesn't even address is that if those jails are closed, I have several inmates in both of those jails, and they're going to come back to Penobscot County, which is already overcrowded.
Just last week, the Penobscot County Jail had a population of 223 inmates for a facility designed to hold 157 beds. Another 58 were boarded out in other county jails, and 60 were in home confinement programs. Morton says sheriffs have been working with lawmakers, county and state officials, trying to fix the beleaguered correctional system for several years. But he says all the good work has been put on hold with the LePage administration's plan. Lawmakers now have the option of borrowing some of its parts or scrapping it altogether before the end of the legislative session. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
A state program aimed at expanding access to treatment for opioid addiction came under scrutiny by lawmakers today. The Opioid Health Home Project was on the agenda before the Health and Human Services Committee. As Patty White reports, committee members and state officials both expressed frustration that the program has fallen far short of its goals.
The Opioid Health Home Project launched about a year ago with nearly $5 million in funding. At the time, the Maine Department of Health and Human Services predicted that it would serve 400 Maine care and uninsured patients using a team-based model of care. Those enrolled would receive medication-assisted treatment, counseling, peer support, and other services. But about 10 months in, the director of the Office for Maine Care Services, Stephanie Netto, reported that the program has fallen short of that 400-patient goal.
There are 18 sites, and we have served about 70 individuals.
Netto was joined by the medical director for Maine Care Services, Dr. Christopher Pizzullo, who told the committee that the Opioid Health Home Program, or OHH, is modeled after other health homes that treat chronic diseases. But Pizzullo says the department has realized that opioid addiction is much more complex than other chronic diseases.
There really seems to be an intensity that we didn't prepare for, and we would like to be able to sort of confront in OHH 2.0, for lack of a better term.
That response didn't pass muster with the co-chair of the committee, Democratic Representative Patty Hymanson.
I could have told you, and the stakeholders could have told you, at the beginning of the opiate health home, what the problems were, that people were sicker than you thought, that there wasn't the infrastructure.
Hymanson and other lawmakers admonished DHHS for failing to work with stakeholders to create an effective model. Some providers have complained that the staffing criteria are too strict and that reimbursement rates are too low. Democratic Representative Dale Denno noted that the state's two largest health providers, Maine Health and Eastern Maine Healthcare System, don't participate in the program.
They're the big fish. If they're not buying into what we're doing, then probably we're not going to be effective.
Committee members asked Netto and Pizzullo whether DHHS should abandon the health home program for a different model that's better equipped to help people in the beginning, more intense stage of treatment. But Pizzullo insists that the model is good and just needs to be refined.
It's so frustrating that we've been told that we're not playing and that we created a system that doesn't work when the system is ultimately so flexible and we just want to make it work with you.
After about an hour-long discussion, the committee decided to send a formal letter to DHHS to ask for a remediation plan to accompany the department's quarterly report, due in late April. Then Representative Hymanson asked a final question about Maine Care expansion, which is now at the center of a political standoff in Augusta.
If we were to have Maine Care expansion, how would that affect the opiate health home or these population of people who are not incarcerated, who don't have insurance?
Stephanie Netto responded that she was, quote, not in a position to answer the question. Meanwhile, Maine Care expansion is supposed to take effect in July after it passed in a ballot initiative last year. But Governor LePage won't allow it to move forward until the legislature finds about $50 million in funding without raising taxes or using savings. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
The recent school shooting in Parkland, Florida, is reviving the long simmering debate over gun violence in the country. Lawmakers are drafting bills in response to students' ongoing protests, and polls show most Americans want stricter gun laws. But in a rural state like Maine, where hunting is a way of life and gun ownership is popular, finding agreement about what those restrictions should be is difficult, as Susan Sharon found out at a gun show this weekend.
The two-day sport and gun show at the Augusta Armory featured weapons from the 17th century to the 21st. And it drew hundreds of people from across the state.
A signature and a date at the top. And then I'll need to see a driver's license, please.
Kendra Lyman Hood is a gun dealer from Livermore Falls, where she runs a small gun shop with her dad. In between filling out receipts and running background checks at the gun show, she said after President Trump took office, gun sales slowed down. But over the past 2 weeks, they've been brisk. Lyman Hood says people are worried about calls to ban semi-automatic rifles like the AR-15, which has been used in several recent mass shootings.
I don't think banning is the answer. Drugs are illegal, you know, all that stuff's illegal, but people still die from overdoses every day. You know, and it's not the guns that are the problem, it's the people behind the guns that are the problem.
That's a common refrain from gun enthusiasts. Lyman Hood and her mother Sheila, for example, come from a family of hunters, where firearm safety was always a priority. But both also love nothing more than target shooting, and Sheila is a fourth grade teacher.
We load up the Jeeps and, you know, we have all of our, you know, different guns and pistols, and we go to a sand pit. We've always had a lot of fun, and I'm always hesitant to say that because people that have different attitudes about guns take that very offensively, and I don't get it.
President Trump has called for arming teachers as one way to prevent mass shootings at school. Many educators have rejected that idea outright. Sheila says she's not sure what the answer is, but for her, violent video games need to be part of the discussion. She says young students are spending hours on end playing them and becoming desensitized to the damage they can do. Derek Savage of Peru wants to see better mental health screenings for gun owners.
You know, I'm not a person who says, you know, we should be walking in everybody's houses and testing what everybody's got and things like that. I think that's a breach of privacy. But I do think when it comes to the guns themselves, you should have some sort of check. You know, there should be some checks and balances.
I'm a police officer, and I'm also an avid, you know, advocate for the Second Amendment.
Tony DelVecchio of Warren objects to calls to ban the AR-15 and bump stocks, devices that attach to semi-automatic weapons and allow them to shoot faster. DelVecchio says someone determined to kill a large number of people will figure out ways to work around both. But he says he would support a 2-week waiting period for the purchase of a firearm, as long as it included a psychological evaluation as part of the standard background check.
I mean, as long as you go through the right steps to make sure someone can mentally and physically take care of themselves and a firearm and be safe around other people, then do what you got to do to make sure that that gets done correctly.
In response to the Parkland shootings, President Trump appears to be parting ways with the National Rifle Association over his suggestion that the minimum age to purchase a firearm should be 21 years old. And John Reed, who owns J.T. Reed's Gun Shop in Auburn, agrees with the president.
You know, you could come in here now today as an 18-year-old, and you can't buy that Tiger 22. But yet you could turn around and buy these assault rifles. It doesn't make sense. Didn't it make sense years ago before this happened? Doesn't make sense now.
But while the NRA objects to raising the age to 21, Republican Governor Rick Scott of Florida has endorsed the idea. Scott also supports banning bump stocks, something Nick Wilson, executive director of the Maine Gun Safety Coalition, says his group would like to see Maine adopt.
We think the bump stock ban is the very least our lawmakers can do. We saw how much damage it did in Vegas, and while it's not used a lot in these shootings, it makes no sense for us to have these devices on the streets.
The coalition also supports limiting high-capacity magazines. Gun collector Bill Damian of Greenbush says the AR-15, which the NRA has called America's most popular rifle, has no place in society. But he says both approaches to gun control just won't work.
There's too many of them out there. A ban on extended magazines is not going to correct the situation. You know, I know for a fact if they came to my house to pick my guns up, it would take a truck.
Instead, Damian says the only way to make schools safer is to hire and pay professional security guards. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, for Tuesday, February 27th, 2018. Thanks to our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.